Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Fleet Marl, and we're going to be talking about the importance of rest. We're going to touch on the power of mindfulness, and we're also going to talk about the importance of really having good daily habits and practices in place. And Fleet will share a little bit about some of his self-care practices that really support him when it comes to sleep. To give you a bit of Fleet's background, Fleet Marl PhD at CMTP is an author, meditation teacher, and social entrepreneur who developed neurosomatic mindfulness, a deeply embodied neuroscience and trauma-informed approach to meditation that accelerates healing, integration, and awakening. He is the founder of the Heart Mind Institute, the Global Resilience Summit, Prism Mindfulness Institute, and Engaged Mindfulness Institute. Dr. Marl is a Zen Roshi and a senior Dharma teacher in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. He is the author of Radical Responsibility, How to Move Beyond Blame, Fearlessly Live Your Highest Purpose, and Become an Unstoppable Force for Good. So welcome, Fleet. It's great to have another one of our conversations.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it, Alex. Thank you for having me.
So I think a good starting point would be why rest and recovery is so important. And also maybe a little bit of the relationship between having intense activity, be that kind of positive stress or negative stress, and where that meets that need for rest and recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we're learning more about this all the time. And we all intuitively understand that, you know, after exerting ourselves, we need to rest and recover. I mean, we intuitively know that. I think we tend to ignore it a lot, many of us, and push ourselves beyond what is reasonable and healthy for us. And, you know, I want to admit right off the bat here, I'm a reformed sleeper. So I spent decades trying to cheat the clock, right? And maybe got away with it a bit when I was young. But you never know what kind of patterns that sets up, even when you're young, and the price that we'll pay for that later on. You know, even some of my mentors in the kind of super high performance world, you know, I remember talking about, well, sleep 7 hours, not eight, because, you know, just that 1 hour is going to add months and years onto your life that gives you an advantage over others to outperform and succeed and so forth. And, you know, there was a period of my life, or, you know, in my, I would say, 30s, where I was sleeping 4 or 5 hours a night and just really pushing myself and thinking somehow I could excel that way. Now, I couldn't even begin to do that anymore anyway. So, and I hope I didn't pay too high a cost for that. But we know today that the body needs rest and recovery, and there is an optimal balance between the two. And one of the great things that we have today is all these wearables. So we can track our sleep, and we can track exertion and strain, and we can track recovery time, and we can track the balance of that. Both recovery, both in terms of sleep and the amount of sleep we get and the quality of sleep we get, but also in terms of heart rate variability measured throughout the day, which can have a lot to do with just mindfulness and daily living and our meditation practices and things like that, can help balance out and allow us actually, if we're into being, you know, physically high performers, which supports being, you know, mentally high performers and life performers, and we really want to do tough workouts, well, we need to balance that with the recovery time. And it's a combination of sleep and then also, you know, how we lead our life on a daily basis, which is has to do with mindfulness, can have to do with breath work and breath regulation, and as well as having a regular meditation practice. So, and these wearables today that they have, now I've actually got two of them, on one wrist and one on the other. One of them is actually a smartwatch, but has a lot of metrics as well. And the other one's purely a wearable. And I'm not going to do a product placement here, but I'm able to access all the information on my smartphone here. And, you know, just last night, I can see that I was in bed for 8 hours and 6 minutes. I really try to stay and be in bed for 8 hours. I was awake 18% of that. I had light sleep for 66% of it, deep sleep for only 16%, and very little REM sleep, which is odd because I know I did dream. And this is not particularly a good night's sleep. Now, the night previously, I had a lot of REM and deep sleep, and it was up around 33-34%. And that's considered recovery sleep, and that's a very good amount of sleep, right, for an adult my age. But, you know, in a lot of the performance worlds, we say that, you know, if you can't track it, you can't improve it, right? And what you do track will improve. So, you know, I think tracking things in our life is really important. And this can, you know, we can apply this to every dimension of our life. But I think it's particularly important in terms of sleep. And you know, I've just really been paying attention to this for some time now and have learned a lot more about it, have interviewed some brilliant scientists around sleep, and I've become a believer. So I'm a reformed quality sleeper. Maybe we could start there.
I love it. I was just thinking, Fleet, you know, it's interesting what you're saying about the importance of rest, because of course, a lot of the doping that goes on in sports is not just about improving performance, but it's accelerating recovery time. And I think people often forget how important that rest and recovery actually is.
You know, I have a friend who became a triathlon athlete at the age of 60. He began. Wow. And I don't know, he's probably 67 now. I think he's been doing it 67 years. And he's serious about it. He has a coach and really works and trains and competes and does pretty well, gets up on the medal stand for his age group quite a lot. And, you know, he's really into the science of this, he says the recovery time is just as important, if not more important, than the actual training or exertion that he does in terms of developing his capacity to improve his times in the triathlon. And so, you know, we know a lot more about this today. And I don't know, can't remember the exact numbers here, but I read about this and I remember it was quite startling when I read it. And I believe it was LeBron James and the great tennis player, Federer, that both of them, when they're competing, they sleep like it was some amazing number, like 12, 14 hours a day when they're competing. And this allows them to compete at the very highest level by really storing that deep, deep sleep and recovery time. So it's quite counterintuitive to what most of us think, right? And most of us think that you know, high-performing athletes like that, with everything they're doing and having to train, they probably would be lucky to get in 8 hours, right? But so, you know, they've understood. They've done the science. I mean, athletes at that level, they have all kinds of coaches and scientists. They get the best technology. And they've learned that it gives them that edge on the court or the basketball court or the tennis court to get that kind of sleep when they're competing. So I think it's really quite interesting what we understand about this today. And, you know, we all want to be at our best in life. And again, we intuitively know that if we don't sleep well, we tend to be a bit cranky, right? We don't perform at our best. Our brain isn't quite, you know, up to speed. And we just know that. But we all kind of suffer with that illusion that we can continually cheat the clock, you know, but the clock is relentless, right? I mean, it's a wonderful thing because it's a rate equalizer for humanity. We all get 24 hours a day, right? There's nobody that gets more than 24 hours. Nobody gets less than 24 hours, but we don't get more than 24 hours. So if you try to cheat the clock today, you pay for it tomorrow. That's all there is to it.
You wrote something really interesting in the notes that you shared in prep for the interview. You said the brain and body's internal health maintenance team works the night shift while we sleep. I thought that was really interesting that when we're sleeping, it's not actually a passive thing. We might be sleeping, but our system's actually working hard.
Well, this is even a deeper view into why rest and recovery and sleep are so important. Clearly, to optimize our performance, it's important, as we've been discussing. But yes, we have this internal healthcare system, or it's been called a waste management system. So our brain operates on basically oxygen and sugar. That's what the brain cells need, the neurons need to fire and function at their very best. And so like any, you know, they're consuming oxygen and sugar. So like any consumption process, there's waste, right? And so how does the brain get rid of that waste? Well, there's something called the glymphatic system that we know much more about in just recent years. There was some really interesting brain scans done of people while they're sleeping, I believe at Boston University in 2019. And that's ongoing. And we're learning so much more about the neurobiology of sleep from these kind of studies. But the glymphatic system is a series of tubes that brings this fresh liquid or fluid into the brain and mixes it with the fluid and the blood in the brain and dissolves the waste into that and then flushes it out back into the bloodstream. And so that only happens, they feel, again, this is ongoing science and research, but the understanding is that this happens during deep sleep. It doesn't happen during light sleep. It happens during deep sleep. And so again, the importance of getting deep sleep. And there's research showing that inefficient waste management, in other words, if we're not able to sort of rinse the toxins and the waste out of the brain, that can contribute to cognitive decline and dementia. And they've seen some of this occur with traumatic brain injuries, with research done with a lot of athletes, especially the football players that are with repeated concussions. And so that kind of alerted them to people who are unable to efficiently remove the toxins from the brain. And this contributes to their cognitive decline and cognitive challenges. And there's ongoing research that is exploring and suspects that inefficient waste management within our brain due to a lack of sleep can contribute to the onset of dementia and possibly even Alzheimer's as we age.
Fascinating. It's fascinating. Also, you said something else I thought was interesting in the notes, and I want to get into this a bit more. You talked about different types of sleep. I thought that was a really interesting, because I think people often think about, well, sleep is sleep. But what do you mean by that?
Well, as I was showing you on what I track with my measurable here, right? So you have, sleep, they measure sleep based on the brain cycles that you're in, the brain waves, right? Your brain wave state. So, I think we know, I haven't looked at this in a while, but, beta is associated with regular cognitive activity. We move into delta when we're moving into meditative states and so forth. And then theta, I believe, is the deep sleep state, if I have it correctly, right? And so they can measure where you are in your sleep cycle by measuring your brain waves, right? And so, and also these wearables detected, I think through that and through pulse and the way that it's not, you don't have, you need an EEG or some other kind of, neurofeedback brain measuring machine to directly measure brain waves, but somehow these wearables are able to measure it, I think, in connection with your pulse and other things they're measuring. So at any rate, we need that deep sleep. And we need sufficient amount of it during the night. We have, most people are familiar with REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep. And this is when we're dreaming. And this is important too, because you might think of dreaming as psychological waste management. There's an emotional processing that's going on, when we're dreaming. And it's kind of, another image that I like for people that are into computers. Most of our computers all do this automatically now, but a decade or so ago, your computer, you had to defragment it periodically because, just through the use of the computer, kind of different files break down and that your computer isn't working as well because you've got all these lost files or disconnected files, broken files and so forth. Even the way the disks, the hard drive on your computer was organized, that would break down. And so you need to run a defragmentation program. Now, your modern computers do that every time you put them to sleep, which is an interesting corollary here, right? You put your computer to sleep, it's doing the same thing. And as you bring it back online, it's doing that. So, there's so many correlates between, how we're building the digital devices and, how the human brain works, obviously. And it's kind of a race to see, you know, this idea of getting to singularity, right? I mean, we're building machines to mimic the brain, but we're actually developing greater understanding of the brain, but using the metaphors of the machines in some way. And, you know, of course, with artificial intelligence, they think someday we may get to where these machines can outdo the brain. Scary thought, but hopefully we'll harness that for good purposes. You know, that idea of defragmentation is what's happening during dream sleep on some level, right? We're doing this emotional processing, right? And so we need both REM sleep and deep sleep, and that's part of your recovery time. So your sleep is made up of times when you're awake. You'd be surprised how many times we're actually awake during the evening. Now, we may wake up and need to use the restroom or something. We're aware we were awake for a while, or maybe we got startled, something awoke us, but we actually wake many times during the night. We don't know it. And then we have what's called light sleep. And those, obviously, being awake doesn't count. Light sleep doesn't really contribute much to our rest and recovery time. It's the REM sleep and the deep sleep that really contribute to our recovery and do this, both this neurobiological waste management and this kind of psychological processing that we need to thrive and be healthy.
It's so funny, Flea. I haven't thought about defragging a computer for years. And I suddenly thought, why don't we do that? But of course, as you say, it's that's how technology evolves. And there's the kind of miracle of the human anatomy of how it does these things. Maybe we could also touch on a little bit of the importance of how what's happening during the day is impacting sleep at night. So for example, if we're overstimulated or overactivated during the day, how that's really setting up our brain and our nervous system for our quality of sleep.
Absolutely. And that's the great thing about the world of wearables and tracking, because you can, like, for example, I didn't do very well with my sleep last night. I had insufficient amount of both deep sleep and REM sleep. And I'm completely aware of why that is. I worked late last night. I'm putting on a summit. And as you know, there are a lot of work and we got a little behind. And so I was up late working last night. And of course, I'm working on a computer. So I'm getting all that blue light and I'm doing all the stimulation and I'm working and, you know, all that. And then finally, I turn it off and I go up and get into bed and want to just go to sleep. Well, I haven't prepared my brain to have a good night's sleep. So how do we prepare our brain to have a good night's sleep? Well, we actually want to start shutting down long before we go to bed. I was, you know, ideally around 4 hours. Now that may seem like a lot. Now that doesn't mean we have to just shut down and do nothing. But, you know, there's a lot of information about this today. We're advised to begin dimming the lights a bit in our home at night and to avoid the blue light of our digital devices, our cell phones and our computers. You know, create as big of a gap, as long of a gap as we can between that and when we go to sleep at night. Now, of course, we can wear blue light glasses that protect us somewhat. That's a good thing to do anyway. I think the science is still out on this, but I'm speculating there's something to it. So I wear them when I'm working on my computer. If we're watching TV late at night, that can be very stimulating and so forth. And again, we're getting, you know, it's a digital device, so we're getting that blue light. So, you know, it's really good to begin just dimming down our day. You really think about how our body, you know, our human lives have changed so drastically, dramatically, you know, even in the last decade, much less the last 100 years, 200 years, and it's changing very rapidly at this time. But our basic body of neurobiology hasn't changed in millennia. And so, you know, we're not designed to live this way. And if you think about how we evolved to live, when the sun went down, you went to sleep pretty soon. What else were you going to do, right? You didn't have lights, or initially you didn't even have, you know, the ability to create fire or candles or something like that. So you pretty much went to sleep. Now, eventually, you know, we developed, you know, fire and then candles and kerosene lamps and things like that. So, but even then, things were darkened. I mean, how illuminated can things be with kerosene lamps and candles and so forth, right? But now we can have it absolutely bright. We can have it like daytime, 24 hours a day, right? Your lifestyle can be like you live in Las Vegas or something and it's open 24 hours a day, right? And, you know, and that's, we're not set up to live that way. Our biorhythms are not set up to function that way. So it's really, you know, we can really exert ourselves during the day and work hard, both physically, cognitively, and, but at a certain point, it's really a matter of, you know, setting alarms on our watch or our phone or doing things so that, you know, and having some agreements with our partners, our spouses, our roommates or housemates that, hey, you know, we're going to start toning it down at a certain time every night and doing certain things to kind of dim the lights, minimize computer, cell phone, television activity, and begin preparing ourselves to have a good night's sleep. And to the extent that we do that, we set ourselves up to sleep well. Now, conversely, to get our biorhythm cycle going in the right direction to begin with, you know, we evolved to get up with the sun, right? That's when we always got up. The sun rises, you get up. Now, many of us, including myself, don't get up at sunrise these days. I aspire to, but I'm not quite there. You know, that was depending on the time of year anyway. Some point, sometimes that would be like 5:30, you know. I'm generally getting up around 6:30 or 7. But that early morning light is really important to expose ourselves to that early morning light because that gets the whole biorhythm cycle going. So we really need to think of our whole day as a holistic enterprise. And then we can even go beyond that to think of our whole year because there's the cycles of the seasons, right? And of course, we've played around with that with the daylight savings time, and that's kind of a controversial issue on several levels, right? But at any rate, there are these cycles throughout the year, and we tend to live outside of them, even with our diet. You know, I get a lot of advice from an Ayurvedic physician who I really like named John Duyard. He has this idea of the three-season diet, to eat in season, right? So getting our lives back in alignment with the natural rhythms and cycles of life, the 24-hour cycle, the annual cycle, in how we live and how we eat, our lifestyle and so forth, all that's going to set us up to optimize our rest and optimize our performance. And this is really kind of going against the grain because I think we modern humans have developed this kind of hubris that we can just push through, right? We can ignore the, you know, we have no limitations. We can ignore life. We can ignore, you know, I'm just going to drive through. And you know, we've developed this complete disconnection from our bodies and from the earth because we haven't lived close to nature for so long. And so we don't respect it anymore. And we're living these very disconnected lives and really paying a price for it.
And I suppose in some ways the dysregulation in our sleep pattern is its own example that something is out of balance. It's almost, it's a expression or a symptom of something.
Absolutely. And again, this is another good reason to, you know, to track things, however we do it, whether we're using wearables or some other ways of tracking our sleep and our exercise and our diet and our lifestyle and our performance and so forth. Because when we notice a change, we can go, oh, well, that's interesting. What's going on there? You know, what's going on with me? Maybe there's something I'm not paying attention to in life. Maybe there's something I'm avoiding. Maybe there's something going on for me emotionally. Maybe there's something relationally going on in my life that I'm not dealing with. And, you know, the sooner we pick up on these things and give them the attention they need and deserve, the less likely we are to end up in trouble, whether it's really emotional trouble with some kind of emotional or mental breakdown, or whether it's, ending up in relational conflicts or ending up in financial trouble or, you know, ending up in real physical trouble, finding ourselves in an ambulance on the way to the hospital because we've been ignoring things for so long. You know, it's like we all know that with our automobile, if it starts making funny noises and we just keep ignoring it, sooner or later, we're going to be calling a tow truck, right? And so it's the same thing. If we ignore our body at the physical, mental, cognitive, emotional, spiritual level, we're going to pay the price sooner or later. So, you know, this idea of getting back into the natural rhythms and cycles of life and really paying attention and tracking allows us to pick up on things much sooner and make the small adjustments to keep our life on track and optimize our lives and our performance, our happiness, and so forth, rather than waiting till things fall apart.
What's your, someone who's personally practiced and I know taught meditation for many years, I'm also curious as to what you see as being the benefit and the impact of meditation practice around sleep.
You know, that's something that I really would love to be able to reestablish in my life. And I'm not talking about meditation altogether, but I'm talking about meditating in the evening. I meditate in the morning every day. My wife and I get up every morning and we share some of the same practices we do. So we're very dedicated meditation practitioners and have been for many decades. And so the morning is really focused on self-care. And I think that's very important. You know, I get up and I have a whole exercise and yoga routine that I do. And then I go in and do the whole bathroom thing. And then we make some tea and go in and do our meditation practice and then go down and have a very nutritious breakfast before and usually go for a walk, all that before we start the day, right? And so that, you know, it's really setting the day up for success. I used to meditate every evening many, many years ago. I meditated morning and evening. In fact, morning, afternoon, and evening. If any people are familiar with my backstory, I had a 14-year sabbatical in federal prison, not to make light of that, but maybe it's helpful to myself to make light of it sometimes. But I actually have deep regrets. So I got in there for involvement with drugs. But I do feel really good what I did about that time. It was basically my monastery time, and I was intensely practicing. I had a very active life. I was teaching school, regular 9-to-5 job, Monday through Friday, and very active, but also really dedicated to practice. And I practice early in the morning. I usually practice again around midday. And I practice, for an hour, hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours at night. So that was really the ideal thing to be doing before going to sleep, was settling down into that profound state of relaxation, right? So I would love to reestablish it and that in my life and have, do maybe 30 minutes of practice before I go to sleep at night. I think that would be an ideal thing. But what I'm noticing, again, with tracking using a wearable, that the more I practice and the more breath work I do during the day, and that's something I come back to repeatedly throughout the day of doing various kinds of simple breath work, the more I do that, the more my recovery numbers go up. Even if I didn't sleep so well, I get good recovery numbers. You balance out strain and recovery is what you're measuring with some of these wearables. And I can get really good recovery numbers just because, number one, I'm doing a significant amount of meditation that day, but I'm also doing breath regulation throughout the day.
Is there something around, even if it's practice in the morning, which is obviously many hours away from going to sleep at night, that, as you say, is somehow setting the system up and bringing it to balance and, in a sense, training our mind into a place where, I guess, when it comes to sleep time, we can actually have an influence over our mind racing and all the distractions and stuff that may be coming in?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, if we develop a solid mindfulness awareness practice, we develop an ability to work with our mind. And it's very unlikely that our mind is going to spin out of control on us and prevent us from sleeping. Now, any of us could have something happen in our life where we're really upset and, you know, it's kind of hard to turn that off at night or something. But in general, if we're regular meditation practitioners and, you know, we're practicing in a deeply embodied way and we're really, you know, even, you know, practicing enough to develop real stability of attention and stability of awareness, and maybe even moving into kind of non-dual forms of meditation. If we're that dedicated to meditation, then we know how to work with our mind. And very unlikely that our mind is going to get so overactive going to sleep that we wouldn't be able to turn it off and go to sleep, because we'll just, you know, immediately begin doing a little breath regulation or something and relating, seeing the ephemeral nature of thoughts and, you know, letting thoughts self-liberate and so forth. I mean, if a practitioner, you know how to work with your mind and you can do that. So it's very helpful. And if we've had a solid practice in that day, it is setting us up, even though it's a long way from when we're going to sleep, it is going to contribute to having a better night's sleep that night. But it's also contributing to preparing us to really exerting ourselves during the day. Because, what you're able to track in terms of strain and recovery, at the beginning of the day, based on how well you slept, and then based on having a morning meditation practice, doing some breath regulation, doing these kinds of things, you can track and notice that you're in a really good recovery place. So you're actually set up to really strain that day. I mean, you're set up to really exert yourself that day and maybe go for some high performance exertion that day because you're in a good state to do that, right? And if you're not in a good state to do that, and then you do it anyway, then, you know, you're creating sleep debt, you're creating recovery debt, And, you know, you try to cheat the clock and cheat your recovery time. And so you're very unlikely to have a good night's sleep that night. And you're going to get in a non-virtuous cycle. You know, a lot of this has to do with, you know, the idea of being in a virtuous cycle or a non-virtuous cycle, even sometimes called a vicious cycle, right? You know, you get things going the wrong way and it just gets go worse and worse and worse. And then sometimes you lose, you know, you just get dispirited about it and you say the heck with it, you know, and you give up, right? Or you get it going again, you take action, get it going again, and that builds momentum, right? You get a virtuous cycle going and it builds momentum. So this very much works on that 24-hour cycle in terms of the amount of exertion we do and the amount of rest and recovery we're getting, whether it's through sleep or meditation or just the way we live, breath regulation. I mean, what's our resting heart rate during the day? That has a lot to do with how much we exercise, but it can also be strongly influenced by being regular practitioners of breath regulation and meditators.
Although I think for a lot of people, often the hardest thing is getting started with these practices, right? They recognize that they should be doing it or that they could be doing it, and they recognize the value, but the hard thing is that initial discipline. I guess particularly the more sleep deprived we are, the less motivation we have, or the more, like, you know, you're about vicious circles and virtuous circles, like the more likely we are to make bad choices or unhealthy choices in terms of what we do. So I'm curious as to, in your experience, what helps people really build these consistent, steady foundations and have the kind of patience and discipline to follow through with them?
Yeah, well, I spoke about my morning routine and my wife's morning routine. They're a little different, but they operate pretty good in parallel. We practice together every morning. And, you know, there's a lot of performance coaches out there, mindset coaches, that talk a lot about developing a strong morning routine. I think Tony Robbins talks about his hour of power and things like that. And, you know, we have one of the secrets to this is, you know, willpower. Kelly McGonigal, a health psychologist at Stanford, wrote a great book called Willpower, and I really recommend it. It's a kind of a mysterious thing. What is willpower? But one thing we know about it is we have a lot more of it in the morning than we do in the evening. It kind of wanes throughout the day. And it has to do with our physical energy, our cognitive energy, and just exertion and recovery and so forth. I mean, maybe if you absolutely optimized everything, you'd still have strong willpower in the evening. But for most of us, our strongest willpower is going to be in the morning. So that's the time to build your disciplines, right? And build that foundation. Now, we always want to start small with whatever we're doing, right? So we just, you know, I'm going to make one incremental change, right? Like, so every morning when I wake up, I'm going to take 5 minutes just to connect with a sense of gratitude, right? For having another day and all the things I can be grateful for in my life, my family, my opportunities, my health, and so forth. And just spend 5 minutes quietly focusing on gratitude, maybe a little slowing down the breath a little, you know, just some little thing like that that we can do and start experiencing some breath from, especially if we do some breath regulation, something even simple like straw breathing, where we breathe in through the nose and out through pursed lips, like that. And we breathe out twice as long as we breathe in. So you might breathe in a 4 count, breathe out an 8 count, breathe in 5, out 5, something like that. Find your own rhythm. And anybody who does that, even for 2 or 3 minutes, is immediately going to experience a rather profound physiological shift. You'll have to go, wow, this works. You'll actually feel yourself slowing down and feeling a lot more relaxed, right? So you get an immediate payoff. And so it's good to find a little thing to build in that, like that you can do. It's short, it's quick, it's easy. You get an immediate payoff because then you're training the brain to recognize, oh, this works. There's benefit in this. I'm going to keep doing it. There's a reward, right? And so you build that one simple one in. Now, and you want to anchor that with something you're already doing. So maybe you anchor it with the fact that your alarm goes off or you wake up, right? So this is the first thing I do. I connect one event with another, right? Or, you know, you have other things that you can anchor things to in your morning routine. Like most of us probably get up and brush our teeth every morning. So what do we do next, right? Or we take a shower, whatever we do. So there's things that we're already doing that we can add new behaviors to, right? This is called habit stacking. You know, I really recommend all the books around habit stacking and tiny habits and so forth. It's always suggested that we start small and then you build routines. So like my morning routine, I built it one habit by another, right? I wake up, and before I even get out of bed, it depends on whether what's happening with my wife. Normally, she's up right away. If she wants to sleep in for some reason, I get up and I go into our guest bedroom and I do it laying down on that bed. But normally, even before I get out of bed, I have this whole stretching routine I do for my back and my core, and I do spinal twists. And, you know, I have a whole routine I do before I get out of bed. Then I get up and sit on the side of my bed and I do breath regulation and gratitude practice. And then I get up and I make the bed, turn around, I see a nicely made bed, which gives me a sense of accomplishment already in the day. And then I get down on the floor and I have a whole yoga routine and stretching routine that I do. Now, I built these things one at a time. Once I finish that whole routine, and sometimes I'll shorten it a bit if I'm pressed for time, but it's hard for me to do that. It's hard for me not to do that routine, right? I feel compelled to do it. Why? Because this has actually become a set of neural pathways, well-grooved neural pathways in my brain, right? Neurons that fire together, wire together. So I built these habits. So I complete that. Then I go in and do my shower and, you know, my hygiene and so forth. And then, as I said, then we have a nice room we've set up for meditation, which again, you know, setting ourselves up for success. If you have a nice space where you meditate every day, like you don't have to clear stuff out of the way and move stuff, it's already there and it's all set up, you're much more likely to do it, right? One thing that I wanted to do was avoid the phone at night. So, you know, if you have the phone there by your bedstand, you know, the temptation, it's just right there. The temptation, it's going to be very hard not to do that. Or you're going to wake up in the morning, the first thing you want to grab your phone and look at it, right? What if you leave it downstairs and you would have to get up and walk all the way downstairs or whatever your house, another room of the house, you're much less likely to do that. So you're setting yourself up for success. It's very good not to have the digital devices near you when you sleep anyway. Get them as far away from you as you can. So you do things to set yourself up for success, and you build small habits into routines, and those routines get well-grained. So you just build this slowly. So I have, you know, really the first 2.5 hours of my day is completely grooved at this point. Now, I'll adjust it a little bit from time to time due to necessities, you know, something will happen. And of course, if I cheat the clock on the other end, you know, then I can really struggle to, but generally, you know, that 2.5 hours is set, and I have a hard time changing it because I've really grooved it. And that's setting you up for success. And then, you know, you can work with the rest of the day. This is an area where I'm challenged is in the evenings. There is somewhat of a routine. There's some things my wife and I do to kind of settle down and so forth. But sometimes I let work interfere, right? So I think in the same way, we could set up a set of routines that we do in the evening where we start to dim the lights at a certain time every day. We get away from the digital devices. Maybe we shift to just some reading, or if we have a partner or spouse, maybe we just have a nice conversation. But we start slowing down and preparing to end our day.
I think what's also important, Flea, strikes me as you're talking, is that you've built this morning routine over time because you've committed to each of those things long enough to go, that had a big enough impact that it deserves to be in this routine, in this structure. And there's something about staying the course with something far enough to actually get that experience that then allows one to have that deeper commitment and motivation.
And the beautiful thing, you build this one little habit at a time. And there's, you know, you just, you know, many people have heard that, you know, if you improve things 1% a day, well, at the end of the year, that's 365%, right? So we just keep making small improvements. It's that Japanese idea of continuous improvement, Kaizen. You just keep making these small improvements, but it really builds up over time. So, you know, I didn't do all that in a day. I built that up over months and years, right? But once you get it established, the beautiful thing then is, it's like you can tinker with it here or there, finely tuning. It's like you have a fine-tuned automobile, but you're still going to, you know, adjust the tuning a little bit here. My chiropractor suggested something new to me. And so I added that into my routine, right? Or I read about something, I learn about something, or I do a breath workshop and I learn a little something. So I tweak my routine a little bit, right? So, you know, once we get that established, then it's just a matter of sort of making small adjustments to really fine tune ourselves for, you know, really optimal performance. And you know, we all know that when we're well rested and we're doing the common sense things that are good for us around diet and exercise and rest, we feel better, we live better, we're happier, and so forth. And when we don't, we don't, right? And there's nobody, there's absolutely nobody that can shift that except us.
Yeah. Yeah. It also strikes me, Fleet, that you're addressing the issue on multiple levels, right? Because you mentioned there's movement in there, there's meditation, mind training in there, there's the right nutrition in there, there's breath work in there. And there's something about, from what I'm hearing you say, for you, about it's not just doing this one piece, but it's actually a lifestyle change that impacts these different kind of arenas, really, in our life. And it sounds like that's, in your experience, important.
It's very much a lifestyle change and a mindset change. And, you know, the more that we get ourselves in sync with the natural cycles of life, with our own biorhythms, with the cycles of the seasons, with the 24-hour clock, with healthy light exposure, and we have some kind of inner practices, some kind of contemplative practices, we begin to reconnect with the way we were meant to live. We begin to reconnect with the environment that we're in. We begin to see ourselves not as these separate, discrete beings that can just run around making use of whatever is around and pushing things out of our way, but that we're actually part of a fabric of life. We're part of an energetic matrix, and that we actually are connected to everyone and everything, which is incredibly humbling. You know, I'm sure many of us have been seeing these photographs coming back from the Webb telescope that are just so, you know, they just leave one so full of awe. And you know, those things can help us realize, you know, how vast and immense and mysterious and magical and powerful life is. And when we start getting our lifestyle back in sync, we start opening to that. And by opening to that, we actually all live in a limitless bank of energy, is one way to look at it. So it's the way my first meditation teacher, the Tibetan master Chogyam Trungpa, talked about it, that we all live in this limitless bank of energy that we can tune into at any point. And actually, you can learn to tune into that and kind of override the body and do incredible things, but then you're going to have to go back and recover anyway, because the body is the body. Now, there are yogis, supposedly, that don't sleep. Now, I don't know about that, but I think they have somehow created a whole nother neurophysiological reality. I did know one Tibetan master whose attendant told me that, as far as he knew, he didn't know whether he slept or not. He said he would disappear into his room 4 hours a night, and he always stayed, you know, in the residence where he was. This was a Tibetan teacher that traveled the world teaching. And all he knew was he went in and closed the door, but the light stayed on 4 hours a day. Now, I don't want to, you know, in any way be pejorative here, because I knew that teacher well into his 80s, and this amazing, profound teacher being. He is still alive, and I have heard he has retired, and I have heard that there may be some cognitive decline. Now, that may have been inevitable with old age, but maybe, you know, eventually even a great yogi paid the price for that, right? But, you know, we get back in tune with the mystery of life and the flow of life and the fabric of life, and that can nurture us and feed us. You know, we are, you know, coming back to, you know, everything we're learning about light exposure and the importance of how that early morning light sets us up to be in our proper biorhythm cycle, right? We are light beings. That's what we are, right? We know that the most essential, what we're actually made of at the subatomic level, is light. That's where we're light beings, and we live in a universe made of light, and we all evolved out of stardust, right? So, you know, we live in this energetic universe. We live in a matrix of energy. And when we get humble and reopen to that and get back in sync, then we're naturally in flow, and we're nurtured by life and empowered by life. And I don't think there's any limits to how high we can perform as human beings in any dimension of our life. I mean, we don't really know what the limits of any level of human performance are, but, you know, whatever those, you know, whatever degrees of high performance in every aspect of life we aspire to, we have to build in, how do we have the energy to do that in a sustainable way, right? And it begins with good self-care.
Yes, because of course that's the thing, right? That someone can perform on something in the short term just by sheer drive and motivation. But to be able to sustain, there has to be that quality of depth of rest that's there. Flea, I'm mindful of time. There's lots of places we could go, but maybe the best piece here is for people that want to find out more about you and your work. What's the best place to go, and what some of what folks can find?
Well, the easiest place to start is my basic website, fleetmall.com, and that'll lead you to most everything else. If you want to learn about the courses I offer online, heartmind.co, which is HeartMind Institute, heartmind.co. And there I have lots of online courses that relate to a lot of what we've been talking about today, as well as the, like your organization, we put on a lot of summits, and we just finished one, and we have a psychedelic assisted psychotherapy summit coming up soon. And we have a big summit every January, which is all about optimizing your life. It's called the best year of your life. And it's the idea in January, we can kind of restart everything and get that virtuous cycle going again in all the different dimensions of our life. So people can learn all about that at heartmind.co. And if they're interested in my book, Radical Responsibility, which is really focusing on there's nobody but us who can make all these changes, they can check that out at radicalresponsibilitybook.com.
Awesome. Flea, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have some time together. So thank you today.
I really enjoyed it, Alex. Great to spend time with you.